Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Thursday. Glad to have you. Glad to be here. Hope you're having a great week. Looking forward to another fun day. As we'll get to everything today, Coach Griff will join us, Dustin Schutte on the dais, and Matt Taylor from the Colts, as plenty to get to, plenty to talk about. Drew Brees going to Fox. Looks like Mark Sanchez might be out. How ironic is it that Mark Sanchez's career comes to a close in Indiana, where his replacement made his bones? Drew Brees looks like he's going to be going to Fox. So we'll see how that works out. And how's everybody enjoying the ESPN YouTube battle that is going on right now? It's not fun for those of us that are subscribers like myself, but what are you going to do? Last night, Indiana basketball opened up their season and the Darren DeVries era. Not a bad night for the Hoosiers as they get a huge win. What was it 98-51, I think, was the final score? Yeah. Indiana had one, two, three, four, five players in double figures, led by Reed Bailey with 21 points, Lamar Wilkerson, 19, Sam Alexis at 17, Tayton Conaway with 14, Tucker DeVries, 18. And it was kind of led by the three-point shooting. The Hoosiers go 10 of 24 total for a little over 40% for the game. Shot 40% and a half in the second half as well. So that is going to be the game. That's what you're going to see. That and some defense. Indiana shot 62% overall from the field last night while holding A&M to 34%. Something that Hoosier fans should like a lot, as this has been the case since Puerto Rico, is the free throw shooting. It's been stellar. And last night, 16 of 16, 100%. How long has it been since you've seen an Indiana team that can just do the basics? Hit free throws, things of that nature. Well, there you go. You've got one now. If these guys can do anything, they can hit shots. And they did that very, very well last night. Reed Bailey, 7 of 7 at the free throw line. Sam Alexis, 4 of 4 at the free throw line. That's a huge difference. Lamar Wilkerson, 1 of 1. I know that doesn't sound big. Tayton Conaway, 2 of 2. I know that doesn't sound big, but you'd be on, if you went back and added up all the numbers from the 2 of 4 and the 1 of 2, and that stuff adds up. And while in this particular game it doesn't really matter, later on it's going to matter. Those are the little things that teams like this Indiana team is going to have to do, because they don't have everything they need, to be honest with you, to match up with the top talent. So they got to make up for it right now. And they are doing quite well. And as a matter of fact, Coach DeVries, of course, spoke after the game. Let's hear what Coach had to say.
I think that the way you've seen the ball move in practice, we've seen it at times in exhibitions. Is that tonight kind of indicative of what this team can do just from the perspective of constantly having the energy, the awareness offensively, the spacing, the understanding of where to be, that the ball can just keep circulating like that?
Yeah, that's what we've been talking about. Like, that's what they've been every day in practice. I was really excited to see it carry over on the game floor, you know, get fans and stuff. Sometimes things can go a little differently. But I thought the guys did an unbelievable job of continuing to just do what they've been doing in practice. And we got a group that has like a really good IQ and feel. And for a group that hasn't been together very long, they really play well off of each other and have a great understanding of some of the concepts that we're trying to do. But they're just out there playing. And that's I think it's allowed them to, you know, play fast and really trust their instincts.
Yeah, Darren, you mentioned the kind of what you're looking for on the defense side of the ball, aggressive, you know, physical, defensive intensity. It seemed to kind of check all those boxes in the first half, waned a little bit in the second half. Lamar was talking how you kind of mentioned they're shooting 70% at one point. How do you teach them that the standard is the standard, and even kind of in blowouts, and he's not maybe against lesser opponents, that you have to kind of get there?
Yeah, that's it was mentioned a couple of times in the second half huddles, and I know it's challenging. I get that you know, human nature kicks in at sometimes there, but it's also great for us to have something to talk about tomorrow. So, but yeah, the first half I thought defensively we were great. I thought we had them uncomfortable. I thought we had them pushed out. You know, got them in areas that they weren't able to take advantage of some of their scoring opportunities. The second half, I thought some of those things that we did a really good job of in the first half, we weren't, you know, quite as in tune with. You know, they want to get baseline. So, you know, in the first half, we did a great job with it. Second half, they were able to get baseline, and that gave them opportunities. And we worked on a couple things in the second half. But, again, we should still be able to execute some of those things on the defensive end, even when we make, you know, some adjustments just to try to work on some stuff.
I'm going to stop him right there and point out that that's one of the things when he talks about making life miserable for other teams. That's what Indiana's going to have to do this year. They're going to have to put teams in uncomfortable positions on their offense and with Indiana's offense. They're going to have to make up for their deficiencies like this. And exactly. And Reed Bailey, at 6'10", you know, he's not a 7-footer, but let me tell you, with the ball, this dude can move. He can handle the ball. He can get it to the rack. And it's going to be difficult for some 7-footers keeping up with him, period. Maybe one of the reasons he was the leading scorer for the Hoosiers last night. And let's pick it back up with Coach DeVries.
Yeah, Coach, you said at Big Ten Basketball Media Day, shooting the three is going to be a big part of who you guys are. 42% from the opener and 16 for 16 from the line. Your thoughts on just how you shot it tonight?
Yeah, I thought, again, I think a lot of that shooting percentage is a product of ball movement and getting the right kind of shots, the right kind of threes. But we have a really confident group. They're very sure of themselves, and they know that they have the green light. They put in the time and the work, you know, so on game night, you know, let it rip. And that's kind of our philosophy. We don't want them to hesitate. You know, even when they miss one, I don't care where they take them from. Just, you know that it's something that's, you know, something that you work on every day, and then we're good with it. So it is going to be a big part of who we are all season long. And you know, certainly there's going to be nights where they're not falling at a high rate. So you're going to have to go to other things. But I think our guys are very capable of that. They understand that, you know, and can make those adjustments if needed.
There's Coach Darren DeVries talking to reporters last night after Indiana's opening season basketball win over Alabama A&M 98-51. And a lot of things there that a lot of fans are going to be excited about. They're going to get to see this kind of play throughout the season. And I think they're going to get better and better at this as they go through the year, of course, playing teams. But they're going to get tested quickly. Sunday in Chicago, the Hoosiers take on Marquette. So that will be certainly a litmus test for this Hoosier team to see them play against a better quality squad right off the bat. And one way or the other, they'll see what more they need to work on, how much better they need to get at certain things right now, and things of that nature. So it'll be very interesting to see how that game comes out. What does Marquette have this year? Shaka with Shaka. Marquette versus Indiana coming up on Sunday at the United Center in Chicago, no less. So that'll be a fun times for Hoosiers, as the day before, Indiana football taking on Penn State over in Happy Valley. So a lot going on this weekend for Indiana fans, for Big Ten fans all the way around. Tons of games that we're going to be talking about. And we'll do just that and more on the other side when we come back. Coach Griff will be with us. Talk about the upcoming weekend and much more. Hit the subscribe and like button if you're following on social media. And, of course, if you're listening on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call in Evansville, 104.7 FM, 1230 AM, WJOB, the voice of the region, and on Fort Wayne's only sports station, 1380 The Fan. Keep it locked right where you got it throughout the day. We're back with plenty more right after these messages. Andy, welcome back. Indiana Sports Beat Radio coming to you on this Thursday. Coach Griffith with us now. Coach, how are you, sir?
Doing good. How are you guys?
Great, great, great. Enjoy basketball season underway now as well. So we've got crossover going on with college basketball underway, college football still in the throes of the meat of the season here on the waning side of the regular season. But we're just getting started with college football playoff talk. Speaking of the devil, tomorrow on the program, we've got the Peach Bowl president and CEO Gary Stokin joining us. The Peach Bowl, one of the six bowl games, one of the final two, I think. Well, I think that's where one of the semifinals will be played there in Atlanta. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. Indiana taking on the Nittany Lions this weekend in Happy Valley. As Indiana, again, heavily favored going into this game, although this is quite different than what we thought it would be 1 month ago. Things have changed, and my, oh, my, have they changed, not just with the coaching change, but Penn State is yet to win a Big Ten game. What a shock that is after starting the season ranked number two in the country. Now it's Indiana that's number two in the country and number two in the college football playoff. My question is, if Indiana goes into Happy Valley and beats Penn State something like, I don't know, 41-42-10, which would exceed what Ohio State did in Columbus, do CFP voters have to rethink who's number one?
No.
Should they rethink who's number
should
one?
Should they rethink? Yeah, because if you go by the prescribed, you know, metrics of everything, some feel that not only should Indiana have been number one, but even maybe Texas A&M had a case to be number one ranked.
Well, I don't know about that, but
by the, well, I'm just saying, by the, if you're going by the true matrix of everything and resume, they feel, you know, most feel that Indiana has a more complete resume at this point than what Ohio State does, as do some believe Texas A&M has a more complete resume. So I think there's some eye tests going on in this equation this year, or it seems to be. I mean, Notre Dame number 10 was an interesting aspect of the poll. In that regard, Texas at number 11, a three-loss team. They've all but thrown out the first game for them So they're treating them as a two-loss team. That's kind of never been done. So there's some things that have happened in this week of the rankings. When you look at it, there's been some change, or at least there appears to have been some change, with the poll and with how they seeded the teams.
Yeah, well, the seeding definitely has taken trains this year. They're going to be seeding teams like they should be, yep, like they should have last year. But that's okay. They learned from that, although it did cost Indiana a home game. And still, so many people are still thinking Indiana's going to wind up with a home game. And I'm telling you, they're not. They're going to wind up in the top four, which means they're going to get a bye. And there won't be any home games by the time Indiana starts playing. They will start playing in the semifinal round, which means they'll be at either the Peach Bowl or the Cotton Bowl or the Rose Bowl, depending on who wins the Big Ten Championship, which is where the Big Ten champion goes still.
Yeah.
So a lot of opportunities for where they will end up. That's the thing, is we don't know where they will end up until after the Big Ten game is played, which sucks because you cannot make travel arrangements.
I know. That's the hard part with all that, is trying to
have don't care.
No, Indiana don't care.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
At this point, but
it's a little man. They don't care about the little man.
That's right. They don't care about us peons out here trying to figure out where to go. But those are all great problems to have at this time of year, you know, trying to figure out where you may or where you may not be when it comes around. And of course, they've got a huge game at Penn State. They're 25-2, all-time record, never won in Happy Valley. I mean, there's a lot of things against this Indiana team heading into Happy Valley Saturday. And it's going to be an interesting dynamic Saturday to see not where Indiana is in the mental compartment. It's going to be where is Penn State at in the mental compartment, because they were two teams on Saturday against Ohio State. First half, they looked like the team that maybe people thought they should be, down three at halftime. Second half, they got completely wiped away by Ohio State in that ball game. And it was like a completely different team that came out on the field in the second half. So that's going to be the challenge for Indiana this week, is playing a Penn State team in Happy Valley, where it's another place that is not easy to go win. And that's what's interesting about Indiana's season this year when it comes to road games. Iowa, Oregon, places that are not easy to go win, they have. And I think that bolsters their resume more than anything, is the ability that they've had to go into the opposing team's arena and get big wins on the road.
Yeah. I'm just wondering what can Indiana put a historic, and it doesn't have to be, but can Indiana put a historic beat down on Penn State in Happy Valley right now and just really put another thump on their, you know, feather in their cap? Because, you know, I mentioned earlier, and it's not about keeping score per se, but if Indiana was to go to Penn State and beat Penn State worse than what Ohio State did at home, that has got to carry some weight, and it's got to mean something, because this is not a place that this happens.
No. Not at all. And that's the, you know, that's the one thing, like, I believe that Indiana's road schedule this year in terms of who they had to go play on the road has been overly impressive to go get wins in. And even what they did to Maryland last week in Maryland's backyard was impressive. Another place Indiana has never played well at. They went in there and totally dominated a game from start to finish. So, you know, this Penn State team, they still have some great players. Catron Allen is a great running back, that can, you know, take over in some respects, but they've really had trouble moving the football. They started the year you're talking about a team that was trying to out trick people in terms of their preparation and stuff by throwing crazy formations at them with junk, And that's one thing that I thought at the beginning of the year is that why is Penn State doing all this junk? You know, they're a team that you can just line up and run the traditional formations and go pound it. And so I'm sure Indiana is going to be expecting, you know, some junk. And this defense, though, that Indiana has this year, man, oh, man, if they really rose to the occasion on each and every Saturday.
Yeah, they're going to face whatever Penn State's going to have to do whatever they can to try to win this game, which we saw Maryland last week. I don't know if you call it junk, but, you know, according to Fernando Mendoza said, hey, you know, you want to focus on trying to take away our passing game, which, you know, he didn't have his normal passing stats, but that was because that's where their focus was, Maryland, that is. However, in doing so, they gave up nearly 370 yards rushing on the ground. So Indiana doesn't care how you get it. They'll give it to you one way or another. It's just like one of those great YouTube clips you watch when you're watching Larry Bird, the story right. of Larry Bird. And I forget the Gary that played for, can't think of his last name, played for Seattle, was a wicked defender. But he's like, no, Larry Bird, man, he going to give it to you how he wants to give it to you, and you going to take it. And that's exactly what I think of Indiana every time. They're going to give it to you how they want to give it to you, and you're going to take it. If you want to try to screw around and mess with the passing game, oh, okay. Well, we're just going to pound the ball with this great offensive line that they have and the stable of running backs. So that's been something that not every team has.
No.
And Indiana has been very, very fortunate in that regard. Maintaining a healthy stable is a critical as you go down this end. Right now, they've got some dings, nothing major except for Drew Evans, which I don't know that major is a word to put to there because we don't know how long he's going to be out. It's indefinite at the moment, but it seems like Aiden Fisher and Elijah Surratt, they're just kind of dinged up a little bit, just need a little bit to get healthy. But you also don't want to mess around and go through games without those guys because it doesn't take much to upset the apple cart.
Yeah, you know, when you start, like you said, losing some guys, that's where, you know, you could see a drop-off in terms of one's ability as opposed to the top guy. Now, I do think Indiana's depth is a whole lot better than it ever has been because I think the guys that have stepped up and stepped in into those roles and gotten some playing time have done quite well. And that's what, you know, you want them, that next unit to be able to do is step into those roles and go play at the level that Indiana's been playing at. I think they've been able to accomplish that, you know, with, you know, on defense, Hardy and Jones taking more of the snaps. So that's the one impressive thing that I saw on Saturday, especially offensively. You know, Zinn, the big fella, he moves to left guard. I mean, here's a guy that's a tackle. He's probably their their next best offensive lineman, and they take him and put him in at guard, and he played pretty darn well. And, you know, Becker at wide receiver, he's come in at times and made some nice plays. He had the big play on Saturday. So they're getting some great play out of guys that are stepping into the role rather than being just the backup. They've stepped into being the guy at the head of the line. So playing well in that regard, I think you said something that I think is ultimately important, and I've been saying it for the last couple of weeks, is that they got to get this run game going because you're getting in that time of year where you've got to be able to run the football effectively, and they've done it, you know, back-to-back weeks, 263 and 363 yards in back-to-back weeks, and that's what you got to see at this time of year as a team that can pound the rock and do it effectively.
Well, yes, a team that can do multiple things, which is what Indiana is doing and what is helping them propel them to being one of the best teams out there. They have, when it comes to overall offense, they're as good as anybody. As good as anybody. Now add in the defense that Indiana has. There are very, very, very few programs that are that good on both sides of the ball as Indiana. Indiana's elite on both sides of the ball. Elite. That, you know what that equals, people? An elite football team.
Yeah.
Add into that that they're not making mistakes, coach. They're not beating themselves. They're allowing other teams to beat themselves. Indiana takes what you give them, and they make hay with it.
Yeah, and that's the that is the key component of what you just outlined there, what makes a good football team. And you have to have a defense that can flat out play and stop people, and you have to have an offense that takes advantage of what defense is put in front of them. Right? You in Indiana, I think, has done that for the better part of the year and done it in a way that has been overly impressive. Not just, you know, well, they won by 10 or they won by, you know, 7. The, you know, these games that most of Indiana has played this year have relatively been double-digit wins when it comes down to it. And that's the impressive thing.
Indiana's averaging, 46.5 points per game?
Somewhere around
not even close to anybody else in the country. It's they're pretty that's they're number one in that margin for sure, and they're, but they're doing so well in other areas. Third down defense, third down offense, total offense. It's just there's so many different areas. Passing yards per completion, and the stats aren't coming up today right now for some reason. That's a shame.
Keeping them from you.
I'm telling you, this is the NCAA. That's my favorite spot to go to because they have so many things, but not working right now. Daggone it. This is something that is sustainable, and it's going to continue to roll forward, and it's going to be fun for Indiana fans no matter what. But this could be an unbelievable postseason. It is going to be an unbelievable postseason. Last year was the greatest football season we've ever had, coach. And not just I'm not talking about Indiana. I'm talking about in college football. And it's just as fun, if not as fun, this year because there are so many different teams that, you know, Ohio State, Indiana, Texas A&M, is Georgia a player?
Alabama.
And you know what? Those are the five. Those are my five. I don't think you go outside of that five. I don't think that if you want to include Oregon in there, you can. I think that Indiana, you know, just because you beat a team once doesn't mean everything. But when you go to their place and do it like Indiana did,
that's
saying a lot.
It'll be interesting what they do against Iowa this weekend.
Yes, it will be, because that's a very important game for both teams as well. If Oregon loses, I think they're knocked out, coach, with a third loss. Well, they only have one loss right now, right?
Yeah, they would be a two-loss team. The thing that helps Oregon...
They're sitting at ninth, though.
Yeah, they are. They're on the cusp of being in no man's land, but... What helps their case now is that Iowa is ranked 20th, which I think they are a top 25 team. And the fact they have to go into Iowa, which is, again, another tough arena to go play in. So that would help them in the event they would come up short. Now, overall, you know, these are two teams that Indiana has beaten. So
if they lose, if Oregon loses, though, do they make the college football playoffs?
It's going to be tough to compare them and Texas in the overall scheme of things because of how Texas has played here the last couple of weeks.
I've got to take a break, but we'll continue this conversation. Dustin Schoene will join us next, so we'll add him in on the conversation as well. Perfect timing. Appreciate you being with us on this Thursday ahead of week 10 in college football. Lots more coming up from Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Couldn't be happier. And Coach Griffith is with us, as well as Dustin Schoene from Purdue Boilers on SI. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Jim. We've got college basketball underway. We are in the mix of college football, the playoff rankings, and I've got a tee time today. What might be the last nice day to play golf. I've got a tee time today.
Some of us have to work. Hey, former Northwestern football coach Pat Fitzgerald said he feels 100% vindicated in the wake of the August settlement of his wrongful termination lawsuit against the school where he was the head coach for 17 seasons and who really screwed the pooch by getting rid of him, because I am predicting that Pat Fitzgerald will be the next football coach at Iowa. Not that they have an opening, but he's going somewhere. With all these empty spaces, actually, I mean, he may have kind of his choice in one of the coaches. I mean, there's other guys out there like Jeff Brohm that are going to go – that's going to go – he's going to go somewhere. Louisville can forget it. They're not holding on to him. They're paying him just under $6 million a year, and there are some schools out there that could nearly double that. I don't know that Louisville would come up with that money, but they might. They just might, in order to keep him, because that's a perfect relationship for them. Having he's a former player, he's from there, went to high school there, the whole family, Brohm family. But there may be a better place, an easier way for him to get to the college football playoffs, Dustin, than someplace other than at Louisville. Although you're in the freaking weak-ass ACC conference, what else do you want?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, that's going to be very interesting to me, because when he was offered the job at Louisville the second time, Purdue's AD Mike Babinski basically said, how much is it going to take to keep you? Like, basically offering him a blank check, and Jeff Brohm said, this has nothing to do with money. So is he going to remain loyal to Louisville because that's where he wants to be? That's where his legacy is. That's where he played. That's where his family is. Or does he, as you mentioned, Jim, take the job at Penn State if offered because he feels like he can get better recruits and maybe have a better shot at winning a national title? But if you're looking to just get into the playoff, I'm with you. I'd want to coach in the ACC because you could go 9-3. And if you get into the ACC championship game, all you got to do is win one game at that point and you're in. So, and they, yeah, but what are they, 7-1 now? 7-1, 8-1, something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, but there is the fact that the ACC is getting one team, maybe two at best sometimes, where if you're in the Big Ten, you can be one of potentially four, and soon to be, it will be four. They will have four guaranteed spots at some point, and yeah. Where would you rather be? At a blue blood in a conference that has four guaranteed spots, or a whatever one you want to call Louisville, a successful program in a conference that gets two at most?
Yeah, I mean that's a great question. The one thing though I would say, what's interesting to me about Jeff Brohm going to potentially Penn State is they got rid of James Franklin because he couldn't win the big game. I think Jeff Brohm would win some big games at Penn State, but there are going to be times when he loses to Rutgers or Maryland or just somebody that has been his MO, is that he'll win you a few big games, but then he's going to drop some games that they absolutely should not lose. So it's going to be interesting. Like, I think he's a great coach. I think he would be a great fit, but there are no guarantees. You're never going to find another Nick outside of Kurt Cignetti. You're never going to find another Nick Saban.
Griff.
Well, the thing about Brohm is I think he's like some against top five teams. He's undefeated. He's found ways to beat top five.
Well, I think he's 4-4 in games against top two teams or something crazy. It's,
yeah, but he's
which
found
is amazingly four games is the same amount that James Franklin had won, except for he had lost 15 more.
Yeah.
So,
Brohm has had like I said, he's had the ways of finding ways to win those type of games. When at Purdue, even he was sorely the big time underdog, but they come up with the big win. And that's what I think is attractive about him when you think about Penn State. But I don't know if he leaves for the Penn State. You know, he's been in the Big Ten. I know Penn State's a different beast at this point in time, but like he's always wanted the Louisville job. That has always been his hope, and was get to Louisville. Now it was going to take the right timing and all that good stuff, but it would be, I think it'd be hard to pull him out of Penn State. Fitzgerald, on the other hand, is the name that I'm trying to keep an eye on, because you know,
he's going somewhere, people.
Yeah, he's laying low.
Coach, and he was wrongly fired.
Yeah.
He's going to come out ahead of this, because he got this nice settlement from Northwestern, whatever it was. I'm sure it wasn't 50 cents. I can promise you that. And then wherever he goes next, it's payday, baby.
Yeah. And that's a name that I'm surprised hasn't been linked more to the Penn State job, because if you ever looked at a makeup of a coach that fits the Penn State identity, Fitzy would be the guy that I would say fits that identity more than anyone they could ever bring in, on top of what he just done at a school like Northwestern. I mean, he's won at Northwestern. He struggled there the latter part of his.
A pair of Big Ten West Division championships at Northwestern.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's nearly impossible.
Right. And he's a name that I think you got to keep an eye on underneath the surface, because not many people are talking about him at this point in time as it pertains to some of these bigger jobs. But I would think if I'm the AD at Penn State, I'm talking to Fitzy and see where he's at and if it's a potential match for them.
The thing about Penn State, though, is they've had their share of, let's say, issues in the past. Mm-hmm. And even though Fitzgerald has been vindicated and in my mind was not guilty of anything, I think that he is a top-level coach. I really do. I think that they may be a little weary of that and stay away from it. I don't know, but there are still plenty of opportunities out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, although I don't know that going down south to say LSU or Florida fits his personality per se, but there's enough openings out there right now that and there's going to be more. We're not done. Wisconsin. Well,
that's a crazy thing.
I think Wisconsin, do they hang on to Luke Fickell? But then again, you have to ask yourself, who are you going to hire if you fire him? So it's a crazy time.
It is a crazy time. I think
that's what I was going
to go ahead, Dustin. Go ahead.
I was just going to chime in and say, that's the job. If Wisconsin becomes open, I cannot think of a better fit for Pat Fitzgerald. Like, that's a guy, they love to run the football. They made a living off of recruiting in-state offensive linemen. He knows how to coach that style of football. I'm not saying they would be a playoff contender, but I think that they would be back to like Paul Chryst level good. So it's one of those things where I don't
know. How much longer is Kirk Ferentz going to hold on at Iowa? Because Iowa is where I believe, is that where Pat Fitzgerald played? Yep.
No, he's a Northwestern guy.
Oh, he played at Northwestern?
Yeah, he played under Gary Barnett.
I think he coached at Iowa or something then. There's a connection. There's an Iowa connection. And
I believe
that would be a very, very great fit.
I think his son plays there now. I think. I could be wrong on that.
I think you're right, but I think that there was a prior connection with Fitzgerald, I think, previously coaching on the Iowa staff. But either way, that would be an absolutely great fit and perfect fit for Iowa football fans. Man, they love that stuff, but we'll see. But, man, we're heading towards the end of the season now. Some big games this weekend. Purdue, I got to be honest, man. Purdue is playing so much better. You can tell they're such a better program than they were a year ago. But at the end of the day, they're going to wind up with just one more win than they had a year ago, I think. And I'm more than surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they had their month of October. They had their opportunities to get wins there with games against Illinois, Rutgers, Northwestern, and Minnesota. They should have won two of those. And to be frank with you, they should have beat Michigan last week. Michigan was without Justice Haynes. They were without Cole Sullivan, their star linebacker. They were down a lot of players, and Purdue had every opportunity to win that game. And even if you just, like, they should have beat Minnesota, Rutgers, and Michigan. So if you, right then, you're 5-4 and you're knocking on the door of bowl eligibility, maybe you feel a little bit more confident going into these last three games. Maybe you can sneak one out against Washington and Seattle. But I think that at this point, 2-7, they just haven't been able to make plays in critical situations. They've come up with big turnovers. They haven't been able to pick up first downs. Whatever the case has been, it's just, you're right, they're playing a lot better football. They're playing a lot more connected, I think. And it, but it just hasn't resulted in wins. And I know that's been very frustrating for Barry Odom and their staff. But I think this is where you just, I mean, you put it all on the line these last three games, because you got number one Ohio State, number 23 Washington, and number two Indiana to close out the year. So I think you just let the dice roll and have some fun with these next three games, because you have nothing to lose.
No, they don't. And they have a 2-week window basically to prepare for Indiana, which is always a good thing when you're, especially when you're playing a top tier team, is having 2 weeks to prepare.
Yeah. You know, Indiana will have that bye as well during that time, but I'm sure they're going to use that more for healing and just getting ready for the postseason, as that will be coming up very quickly, as a week after the regular season ends, college, the Big Ten Championship, baby, in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium happens. Then you get some time off again after that. I think they'll get another about 3 weeks off after that game.
Do you know how red Indianapolis is going to be on that first weekend of December? Because you're probably going to have Indiana and Ohio State in the championship game, and then Louisville comes to Gainbridge for that. Like, it's just going to be a sea of red.
Oh, that's true.
All around, like, you won't even be able to differentiate between the teams. That's going to be crazy. It'll be a lot of fun for people that are there, but it's going to be crazy.
Well, maybe that'll keep the rival rivalry down a little bit. Less fights that way. You can't tell who you're arguing with. you don't matter. Something I noticed by looking at the Big Ten Conference, and it's not a great thing, but one positive thing for Purdue is they have just as many conference wins as Penn State. So you got that going for you. But
yeah.
Penn State, Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Purdue have combined to go 0-22 in conference play.
Michigan State hasn't won.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, they're 0-6.
Wow, I thought that they had won one, but clearly I'm wrong.
And you look over at the Southeastern Conference, and I see there's one team that does not have a victory in conference play. And while that there are still 1, 2, 3, 4 others that only have one, they all have one. And again, that shows a little bit of difference in, even at the bottom, the SEC is a little bit better than the Big Ten right now. And that's right now. You can't let this schism grow. You've got to, the Big Ten has got to get it together now and get their teams up to speed, man. They're wanting to fight for 4 guaranteed playoff spots. Well, you better make sure you've got 4 teams that deserve to go, because right now they don't have 4 teams that deserve to be in there, in my opinion, yet.
Well, I agree, but I think if you look at just last year, the Big Ten got 4 and the SEC only had 3. I think the Big Ten last year was far better than the SEC top to bottom. So we've had a shift. We'll see what happens with some of these coaching changes. Like, if Penn State, do they make a home run hire and are they instantly a contender? We'll see what happens with Wisconsin and whether or not they move on from Luke Fickell. I think Michigan could be really good next season. I think Bryce Underwood could take another step and a big step in a positive direction. But that's a team too, Jim, where I think they play Northwestern and Maryland, or maybe Maryland Northwestern before the end of the season. They play Ohio State. They've had Ohio State's number. So what happens if they beat the Buckeyes in that final game? I mean, then you're looking at potentially Indiana, Oregon, Ohio State and Michigan. So there are some opportunities there.
If Michigan were to beat Ohio State, they would play Indiana in the Big Ten championship.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So they're probably a lock to get into the playoff. And Ohio State at 11-1, even though I don't know that they have a signature win outside of Texas, and I don't even know how good of a win that is, they're going to get in at 11-1. So I think it's likely that they'll have three teams this year, but there is a chance that they get to four.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The SEC, no doubt, will have five teams in. But then I wonder about other conferences. Schools that look like they were a lock early on, not so much now, especially within the ACC. You've got Virginia, Georgia Tech, Pitt, and Louisville, all ranked, all with one loss or less. Virginia is still undefeated at 5-0 in conference play, 8-1 overall. And Georgia Tech 8-1. But, you know, you've got conference tiebreakers within this stuff. And if you don't make it to the conference championship in one of these conferences, you ain't going. That's pretty much the end of that.
Yeah.
So if, say, Louisville was able to get into the ACC Conference Championship against Virginia, Georgia Tech wouldn't go, and deservedly so. But that doesn't mean the loser of the ACC Championship goes either, because none of them are ranked in the top 12. The champion would get to go.
Right.
But I think the ACC gets one. It's a one-bid conference this year.
That's a very real possibility, yeah.
And then you look at the Big 12, who they've had some shakeup, because Cincinnati was looking really good, has been ranked all year. Now they're not ranked, which I think is a little bit of crap. They're 7-2 overall, but 5-1 in conference play, but they lose to, Utah that beat them last week? I can't remember. I forget.
Yeah, I can't remember either.
But they Utah has two conference losses. They're probably out. Houston now with two conference losses. They're out. It looks like Texas Tech and BYU, both of them will probably get in. They're both out of the top eight.
Yep.
If they play for the conference championship, it doesn't matter who loses that game, they're going. The only that's probably going to be your number five seed, the winner of this game, the Big 12, because the Big 12 is the next strongest conference. And whether it's Texas Tech or BYU, we don't know. BYU still undefeated, but we'll see. Man, it's gonna be fun.
Yeah,
so if BYU chance.
So you're saying if you're BYU and you beat Texas Tech, maybe the Big 12 only gets one team in. I mean, it's interesting, and this was a mess all last season, the Big 12. So with 3 or 4 weeks, we think we always have it down, and then some crazy things start to happen. So there's still a lot of football to be played.
Always is, man. What is your weekend going to let's see. I got a tea time. Is that what you said?
I do have a tea time. Purdue women's basketball on Thursday tonight. Purdue men's basketball Friday. Then we have football against Ohio State on Saturday, and then a volleyball match against Iowa on Saturday night. So there's actually a volleyball match on Friday against Penn State, and so it's been a crazy week in West Lafayette for sure.
Well, hopefully it stays crazy. You got to keep everything going. We've got to take a break. We've got more coming up. Dustin will stick around, I think, before he heads out to his tea time. Coach Griff is with us, and Matt Taylor should be joining us from the Colts. See if they can pick it back up. More coming up from Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. I hope you're enjoying your week. Jim Coyle with you as always. Dustin Schutte from Purdue Boilers on SI with us, and Coach Griff as well from thehoosier.com. The Colts, my kingdom for the Colts. They head across the big pond this weekend to Joymany Wiener Schnitzel on the menu as they head to Berlin with the with some added sauce to the recipe this week. Looking forward to Matt Taylor coming on, because I know I'm going to have to speak in code, because they can never talk about guys until they have, you know, become official and gone through all that rigmarole stuff. So I'm going to have to speak in code when he joins us. Hey, Matt, what's your favorite sauce? Do you like extra sauce? Do you like red sauce or blue sauce? Obviously, Sauce Gardner, whom I'm directly speaking of before Matt joins us, the newest Indianapolis Colt, as they going for it, man. Shane Steichen has a new player to put on the field after GM went out and traded off a couple of first round draft picks to the Jets, which, you know, that they'll be wasted. They'll probably end up getting those guys back one way or the other anyway. But Sauce Gardner, quarterback, really strengthening up the Colts defense. I mean, I love this, to be honest with you. I love this trade. I love the look. I love the fact that their offense is playing extraordinarily well at a high level. What can we do? Oh, let's make our defense a little stronger. And they do just that with an all-pro defensive back, as we're only, you know, what, we're halfway through the season right now, Coach?
Yeah, I mean, it was a trade they needed to do because of their limitations there in the secondary. They gave up a lot. You know, that's the one thing on this trade, is they did give up a lot. But as they always say, if you want something, you have to give something. And unfortunately, the Colts needed a secondary piece that they have been missing. And we'll see how it all pans out. I mean, the things about trades are, there's two phases of trades. One is the here and now, which the Colts are more worried about than the latter, which would be for the future. So they were willing to give up some of what may be the future to further here and now.
Yeah, I think Matt joins us in the next segment, so we can talk about it all we want, but he won't be. It just dawned on me. I'm like, I think he's the next segment. So what are you going to do? But, hey, I talked about this, and I know you're not going to be covering the Boilers. You won't like this much. But, you know, I talked about the real possibility, and it would take a lot of things falling into place. But how crazy would it be for Indiana to win the Big Ten championship, to win a national championship, to have a Heisman Trophy winner, and for the Colts to win the Super Bowl? Now, yes, it's crazy. I get it. I'm not saying it's not. But guess what else it is? Every one of those all are very possible to happen. I don't know if I'd say very possible to win a national championship, but likely. I mean, I think that they've got a 1-in-4 shot at worst amongst this. Heisman Trophy, well, that's going to be tough, because no one in the last couple of weeks has really had Heisman-esque moments, but they're still leading their team to wins. And Julian Sayin, who has been, you know, on the fringe of the conversation, is going to get up more into the conversation. When you're the quarterback of the number one team in the country, it's kind of hard to not be. And he's throwing at an 80% completion clip right now as, what, a sophomore, I think? And that catches your attention as well. But Fernando Mendoza also doing a lot of great things. You know, he's 70-something percent completion percentage rate, but he also is leading the country in touchdowns. He's the projected number one overall draft pick in the NFL, which tells you a lot about what he's doing on the field. And he may or may not still be the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman. I don't know yet, but it won't matter who the odds-on favorite is right now, because it's gone. In my opinion, it's going to come down to the Big Ten championship game mm-hmm. for that award this year, guys.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. Yeah, I think it's going to be a matter of saying and Mendoza in that respect. So
what are you saying?
What are you saying? I'm saying that he, right now he's completing about 80% of his passes, which is just ridiculous in that respect.
But at the same time, Dustin, is this because it's an offense that's made to be easier managed easier with a lot of shorter passes, quick throws out? I think that from what I understand that they to pull up the Ohio State stats to see what their completion per completion throw is.
But he can stretch the field. I would argue he's probably benefiting more from just the fact that Ohio State always has a plethora of the best wide receivers in college football. Because he can throw it down the field, but when you have Jeremiah Smith down there, you can kind of just chuck it and assume he's going to come down with it 75% of the time. Like, he's that good. And Carnell Tate is the guy that gets overshadowed, I think, and he's really good too. So, yeah, I mean, what I was just going to say, Jim, you can say that those things are crazy, that Indiana wins the Big Ten, the national championship, Fernando Mendoza wins the Heisman, and the Colts win the Super Bowl. The least likely to me of those is that the Colts would win the Super Bowl. Like, if I had to bet on which things would happen, I would think, yes, I think the Colts are very good. I think they are capable of making a deep playoff run, but I think they're also capable of that stinker that we saw in Pittsburgh. So, like, this is why, I mean, I still legitimately believe that Indiana is the number one team in the country. And I don't know what's going to happen when they play Ohio State. I think Ohio State's defense is legit, although they showed some holes against Penn State. To me, Indiana's got the most impressive win in college football. Maybe the two – well, I don't know about two, but another one is that win against Iowa on the road. So, like, Ohio State has been dominant, but – outside of that week one win where they won by 7 points against Texas, what's their other signature win this season? And they won't get one until they play Michigan.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other things as well that I'm kind of slowly putting numbers together, Coach. But you've watched both teams play, and we've heard all about Ohio State's defense, and there's no doubt it's good. It's, you know, they're allowing less than 7 points per game.
Yeah.
But Indiana's is not exactly stinking it up. They, you know, they would probably be averaging about the same exact if you took away the plays that they've allowed on broken coverages. That, you know, those broken coverage plays we've seen mm-hmm. in the secondary happened again at Maryland when a guy fell down. Only the third second half touchdown they've given up this season. But, you know, a guy in the secondary falls down and he's able to score. But Indiana is just, I think that, like right now, I'm looking at rushing yards, okay, for the season. For the season, Ohio State has 1,226 yards total rushing. Indiana's Kalon Black has 619 and Kobe Martin has 601, or Roman Hemby has 601. So almost Indiana's top two running backs have the same amount of rushing yards total as Ohio State's entire team, which includes 14 different ball carriers. So Indiana can run the ball and does run the ball much more effectively, mm-hmm. I think. From a passing standpoint, total yards, Indiana's at 23-33. Ohio State's at 22-74. So, you know, let's call that even.
Yeah.
Passing is very, very similar, the same. But the running game could be the difference between these two teams. I don't know. We'll find out. We can talk about it all we want, but right. We're going to find out.
Well, I don't think Ohio State offensively has had the running game that they're accustomed to having in the past. I don't necessarily think they've got, you know, a guy that they can put back there and just, you know, feed him the ball. 30 times a game like they have been able to in the past. And again, defensively speaking, they're both identical in a lot of ways. I think what Patricia's brought to Ohio State compared to what Knowles did is Patricia's more of a pure line it up, play sound, play gap responsibility, and go and turn it loose. And I think that's what you've seen from Ohio State this year, more so than last year, where Knowles can be a little bit of a pressure guy that wants to always bring heat. And sometimes if you don't have the back end on that, you get burnt one or two times. It's, you know, 88 out the gate.
88 out the gate is exactly where Dustin's going. He's got a tee time. Tee time.
I will see you guys next week. I appreciate you having me on, and have a good weekend.
Well, as Vince Vaughn would say, I hope you fall down and knock out both your front teeth. enjoy, buddy. Enjoy it. Have fun. Care. Hit them straight, buddy. Dustin Schutte joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Coach Griff is still with us. It's just going to be cool. Of course, you know, we're getting put the cart ahead of the horse a little bit. But you know what?
Well, so I think we got to start planning for it.
Why not?
But, yeah, well, it's the
what thing has been. Let's talk more about Penn State. What has been their problem? Now, obviously, they've lost their starting quarterback.
Yeah.
And
I've never been a Drew Aller fan.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. I thought he was just
a manager. Quarterback. Yeah, I thought he was
a good manager. No, but they didn't have great offense to manage.
Yeah,
that was the thing. You've got to be able to throw the ball and have guys to throw the ball too.
Yeah, they've lacked
even to be a good manager.
Well, they picked up some guys in the portal. Pena, kid from Syracuse. A couple other guys. One of their top receivers is a kid they got from Troy. So they went the portal for the wideouts that they were lacking on their roster. And the thing that I found interesting about Penn State watching them throughout the year already is Andy Kolonecki is the coordinator that came from Kansas, had a bunch of success there. Good offensive line coach, but he was really, throw a bunch of different types of funky formations at defenses and then, you know, trying to trick them and, you know, in that regard. And I just thought, man, this is just a lot of junk. I mean, when I watched him play against Oregon, it almost got to the point of being ridiculous trying to watch the game because of the number of formations that were just like, what are you doing? I mean, this doesn't make any sense. You're not getting what you need out of these formations because Oregon's just, you know, thumping it down your throat. And I think that's been a big problem at Penn State this year is offensively, they've been about smoke and mirrors and instead of just lining up and playing the game. And when they lost those three games in a row by a total of 10 points, a lot of it could be placed on what the offense couldn't accomplish. Now, defensively speaking, there's the other side of the coin is Knowles is a guy that likes to come after you and pressure you like he did at Ohio State. Indiana did not handle it that well that day. You know, they had a lot of problems in that category on top of the noise. And you can bet that game plan that they're going to face Saturday is going to be similar to what they faced at Ohio State because that was a proven plan. So you're going to see a lot of some of the similar things that Indiana faced at Ohio State a year ago, especially running the football. You know, I think what he'll try to do is he'll try to outnumber them with zone pressure stuff to keep them out of the run game and go one-on-one with their DBs against Indiana's wide receivers out on the outside. So that's going to be the whole thing is can Indiana beat the pressure coverage outside Saturday if Penn State wants to take away the run game and then match up their corners against Indiana's corners or Indiana's wide receivers. That will be the question mark for me in that respect Saturday.
Well, here's right into that. Here's a stat for you. you know, talking about comparative stats, and I'm going to get off this Indiana-Ohio State thing, but I caught this last little thing. I'm kind of jumping around. Defensively and offensively, interception-wise, Indiana's thrown, I think, 4 interceptions on the year, Mendoza yeah. has. Mm-hmm. And Julian Sain has thrown 3, I believe.
Something to that effect.
Ohio State's defense has come up with 5 interceptions on the year, while Indiana's 13.
Yeah,
big difference.
Big difference. Yeah, and that's huge. And that's the
5 interceptions on the season. That's boy. Yeah,
they're theoretically a +2 in that arena. Indiana turnover margin wise is a big time turnover team that has been able to get the big turnovers that have resulted in points this year, just like they did last year. And those are huge because it's almost giving you 2 touchdowns when that happens, when you get an interception.
Well, I saw last week at Maryland when not just the interceptions, those are something. And that Lewis Moore interception, that was an NFL interception.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I was more impressed with the 2 forced fumble takeaways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and when I say forced turnovers, they were just that. They were forced. They were literally taken out of the hands of the runners. Boykin with the first one, mm-hmm. stripped it, picked it, scooped it, scored. And mm-hmm. then Byron Baldwin said, hey, I like that idea. Did the same thing. Stripped it, knocked it out, scooped it, picked it up, and fell on it for Indiana in the late in the second half. But forcing turnovers, I mean, literally just taking the ball away.
Yeah.
So, hey, we've got to take a break. Got more coming up. The great Matt Taylor, the voice, the golden voice of the Indianapolis Colts, getting ready for Berlin. He's gargling in Wiener Schnitzel water as we speak, getting ready for this hit. We're back with more right after these messages. Welcome back in Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Thursday. Coming at you, Jim Coyle with you as always, joined by Coach Griff and the Golden Boy of Matthew Taylor from the Indianapolis Colts, currently gargling with Wiener Schnitzel water, preparing for his trip to Berlin, Germany. How are you, sir?
Boys, what's going on? Can you hear me okay?
Oh, man. You all the way from Berlin, Germany.
Not quite yet. We're leaving later on this evening, so.
Hush.
I know.
It's the trickery, man. It's trickery.
Trying to be like Orson Welles, Theater of the Mind right there, and I blew it.
Strategery.
I'm sorry.
It's all about strategery.
I screwed it up for you, man. So, no, we're leaving later on this evening, and then we will land tomorrow. It's like being in a time machine. You know, you get on an airplane at 8 p.m. Eastern time, and then you land middle of the day, Friday afternoon. So it's going to be a time warp, and it's going to be it's quite an adjustment in a short period of time.
Well, at least you're not further west, where you could actually leave and fly west and go back a day.
Right.
Or something crazy weird like that. But, what's your favorite sauce?
I'm truly Midwestern, so I like the versatility of ranch. Most people don't consider it a sauce.
Some people consider it just
a dressing. I consider it a sauce. Because you can put that bad boy on pizza and wings and
anything.
You can get creative with it. So
you're on peanut butter and jelly if you want.
So, well, I don't know about that, but I'm very Midwestern in terms of my ranch takes. And, that's my most versatile and go-to sauce, if you will.
I'm with you, brother. I'm right there with you. I love it. I'm about everything. I used it on about everything. Something I heard recently. How about mayonnaise on hot dogs?
Absolutely not. I mean,
I just heard this. I forget who brought it up.
What psychopath are you talking to?
I saw this, and it was someone well known that said, "All right, I'm going to suggest something," And yeah, it was mayonnaise. And I'm like, all right, I've never thought of that, but I like mayonnaise. And I'm going to try that at some point. Let's see.
Please don't. Oh, yeah, please don't. I can already tell you it's terrible. Please don't. You don't need to waste your time.
Hey, I love hot dogs. Good hot dogs.
Mayonnaise. I think mayonnaise is the opposite of ranch, where mayonnaise goes on only a handful of things. Like mayonnaise is like the fullback of condiments, where you gotta have one, but you only need one at certain times. There's only a situational, slim picking opportunities for a fullback on your roster, just like mayonnaise. So you gotta have mayonnaise in your fridge, but it only comes out, once or twice a year, at least in my household.
Well, did you know that using mayonnaise on hot dogs can enhance their flavor and texture, offering a creamy yet tangy alternative to traditional condiments like ketchup and mustard?
That person needs to be that person needs to go to an insane asylum.
Mayonnaise acts as a fantastic base for mixing other ingredients, allowing for endless variations, but it's diverse options. While many enjoy mayonnaise on their hot dogs, others may find it unappealing. This reflects their personal taste and cultural background.
Yeah.
I bet you didn't. You always know you're going to get some kind of education here. Yeah. Matt, but that's not one you expected today, I bet.
I doubt Sauce Gardner likes mayonnaise on his hot dog. I bet he didn't. I would go as far to say that he's not a big hot dog guy to begin with. Certainly not.
Probably not.
Hot dog.
Yeah, probably not. But hey, what a great move for the Colts. And I love this move. Their offense has been extraordinary this year. It's been elite. Yeah. Last week, I look at that as those are games that happen in the National Football League, people. When you have a week where crap just ain't going right, 6 turnovers, yet you still lose by a single score on the road against a solid team like Pittsburgh. Yeah, that stuff's going to happen. You're not going undefeated throughout the season. But I liked the fight that they showed, that they were within a freaking score after 6 turnovers, Matt.
No doubt about it. No, I think this move, first of all, it's a very aggressive move, and it sends a message to the locker room that we believe in what you're doing. This start that we're off to here at 7-2, it's not a fluke. We've been trying to build at this for a long time. We've talked about this in terms of the roster and how well it's been constructed. It's just needed stability and consistency at quarterback. And now that the team is finally getting that, you're starting to see how high the ceiling is from this group, because it's such a good nucleus of players that have been playing together now for quite some time. And so you see Mr. High Tide, that's what I call him, that's Daniel Jones, he's lifting all the boats around him, and you're seeing this team take off. And so they finally have been into a position where they are afforded to kind of take a look at what's out there on the open market, or at least field some trade offers at the trade deadline. Certainly didn't see this coming with you talk about trying to get better and giving up some pieces and some draft picks for the upcoming season. There's that ideology, and then there's this. This is just completely going for it. This is foot to the gas, all chips in. This is saying we have a team that we think right now can do major things coming up in the playoffs. So I think it sends a lot of confidence to the locker room. But secondly, it sends a message to, or just further cements the belief that in order for this defense to work under Lou Anarumo from a scheme standpoint, they've got to have playmakers in the secondary and guys that have experience and guys that can go about the plan of disguising things in the line of scrimmage for quarterbacks and, being able to handle a lot and use that experience and just get their hands on the football. At the end of the day, they just got to be playmakers. And so now, at least on paper, you've got Jarvarius Ward and Sauce Gardner and Kenny Moore the second and Jalen Jones, who might be now able to play in a specialized role, maybe in some sub packages, nickel or dime. They've been trying to get this secondary stabilized all season, not because of lack of aggressiveness, just because of injuries, right? They've had a ton of injuries and guys are in and out of the lineup. And so you know, hopefully once Ward comes back after the bye, coming off of IR, you know, that first game after the bye against Kansas City, you could see a full deck, if you will. Hopefully, knock on wood, you get everybody available to go, and you see just what the full potential is of a secondary now that includes Sauce Gardner. But I think also, too, just one more final thought on it. I love the aggressiveness from the Colts, right? They gave up two first-round picks in order to get what I always say, and you might be rolling your eyes at this because I say it all the time, you got to have premium players playing premium positions in the National Football League to be a great team. Every year in the playoffs, you see it, right? Teams that go far in January and February, they are solidified because they have top-end talent at the most important positions on a football team. It's just the way it is, right? Some positions are weighed more heavily than others. You know, premium positions on offense are what? It's quarterback, it's left tackle, and wide receiver. And then on defense, it's edge rushers, guys that rush the passer, and it's cornerbacks. It's guys that shut down receivers. And so this is a top-end guy that plays a premium position on defense. So I'm all about it because in the NFL, most NFL rosters are built the same way because of parity and the salary cap. The difference between good teams and great teams and elite teams are, do I have more? Do I have better players? Are my best players better than your best players? And do I have more great players than you do? That's what it boils down to. And so don't get caught up in the Colts gave up two first-round picks and they sent A.D. Mitchell to the Jets. I mean, if this season goes the way that, you know, all Colts fans want it to, they're going to be picking in the 30s, you know, in the first round. They're going to be picking very late in the opening round of the draft. Who are you going to get at a premium position in the first round of the draft that's better than Sauce Gardner? Nobody, all right? So don't worry about it. You got proven production on Sundays over Saturday potential. Give me that any day of the week, you know, and so that's what the Colts have. And they were bold, they were aggressive in doing it. And they've got, again, they got a premium guy that plays a key role on defense now.
Yeah. Hey, Matt. Yeah. That, this trip to Germany, I've always wondered, when the NFL teams head over and such, does the NFL provide a, I don't know if it's a, you know, like an itinerary of what needs to happen or what you have to do to prepare for a trip like this to be ready to play on a Sunday. Do they give any guidance to the teams when it comes to these trips to these, whether it's Germany or London and so forth?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that they do. I think you used the right word. It's guidelines or outlines, suggestions. You kind of do's and don'ts, you know, here's what you might run into in terms of hurdles with, you know, airport and airport security and, international travel. And, here's some of the different government regulations. I know one of the things that they're having to deal with is after the game is over, just because of, you know, German government, there's a curfew, in Berlin. And I don't know what time it is enforced. You know, luckily I don't have to mess with that stuff. Our NFL, or I should say our football operations staff has to deal
Sir,
with
it. Sir, where are you going? Do you have the proper papers?
That's it. That's it. So that's what's really kind of scary is you as soon as the game's over, you got to load up and load out and get to the airport so you can get out on time. So just things like that I think the NFL is helping with, but I think for the most part, it's up to the teams to decide their itinerary and where they want to go and where they want to practice and the things that they need to practice. So there's just so much logistics that go into this. And, you know, we did it 2 years ago in Frankfurt. This time it's in Berlin. But believe it or not, because it's in a different stadium, it's in a different city, it's different just enough that it makes it almost like a completely different trip.
Yeah.
So it's definitely it's a mega undertaking by our equipment staff and our football ops staff. And thankfully for, you know, people like me, I'm just told where to go and where to be and, you know, what I can and can't bring on my bag. And, you know, the biggest hurdle that I'm running into just from a, you know, radio standpoint is just, there's a lot of electricity conversion stuff that we're having to deal with. And, you know, where where can we have access for things in the stadium? And, you know, it's obviously it's a historic stadium. It's, you know, almost 100 years old. So there's going to be some things that just, you know, come, there's some challenges just that come with that, with, you know, how we get things, you know, to different places and technology and things like that. But at any rate, it's going to be fun, but there is a ton of planning and logistics that go into it.
What are some of the things you cannot take in your bag with you on this trip?
Well, it's just little things. I mean, it's, you know, when we fly domestic, you know, we're kind of spoiled where we don't really have to. I mean, we go through security, and it, I mean, it's a chartered flight. So we go through security, but we don't have to worry about, you know, how big our bag is. We don't have to worry about, you know, fluid sizes. You know, you just bring shampoo and toothpaste and things like that. You just throw it in the bag and you go. This is kind of like, you know, you have to, abide by all the different rules and the guidelines. You know, there's certain
the dude always abides,
you know, batteries that you can bring and you can't bring and other technology just because it's an international flight and a different airline than we normally take. So it's, you know, just little things like that, that kind of add up to, making sure you're on your P's and Q's before a big trip like this.
Hey, man, I appreciate everybody for joining us on the program today. Big thanks to each and every one of you. Most importantly, without you, we've got no reason to be here. Back tomorrow to do it all again as we get you ready to head out for the weekend. Get your picks for the pick'ems for on the ESPN College Pick'ems for ISB. And don't forget to go to thehoosier.com, subscribe, and put yourself in the drawing for one of these beautiful On Three embroidered Adidas jackets. Back tomorrow to do it again. For Coach, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.